Welcome to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm Eric Whitney, filling in for Sally Mock this week. I'm joined by University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine and former Capital News reporter Chuck Johnson. And this week, Montana got its second visit from a presidential candidate. Donald Trump held an event in Billings on the same day he secured enough delegates to officially become the Republican Party's nominees. His speech seemed like it was full of some pretty surefire Montana applause lines, like this one.
As you know, crooked Hillary Clinton wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. That's not going to happen. So just remember that.
Rob, what did you make of Trump's visit to Montana?
Well, Eric, it seemed to be everything we've come to expect from Trump. His speech was entirely unrehearsed, totally off the cuff. He was, as usual, straightforward, direct, aggressive, frequently over the top. It was filled with mockery of his opponents and fawning flattery of his supporters. Also, as we've come to expect, the speech lacked, as far as I could tell, anything approaching serious engagement with a policy issue or the governing process. And there was nothing really there to indicate that Trump had any real interest in learning more about those things. Now, of course, for his supporters, those are all the things they love about him. For his critics, that's just more fuel on the fire.
Yeah, it sounds like North Dakota sort of stole Montana's thunder on the Trump visit, because earlier in the day he was in North Dakota and gave an energy policy speech, somewhat more substantive, and also secured the delegates over there. So, my take is Billings was kind of a drive-by for him.
I'd agree with that. The North Dakota speech was more relevant to Montana with the energy issues, but it was vintage Trump. I mean, I've watched a number of his speeches as well as the others, and no surprises. And the crooked Hillary line is one he's been saying for some time. And I don't think she's ever said she wants to abolish the Second Amendment, but that's a line he's used many times too.
Maybe the most significant Montana news out of his visit was Ryan Zinke's response to the visit and the sort of things that he did. And then Senator Steve Daines actually came out and formally backed Trump, I believe, for the first time. Is that how you guys see it?
That's correct. Daines had originally been a Rubio backer and had kind of been silent since Rubio dropped out. Ryan Zinke, the state's congressman, introduced Trump, and he held his name out to Trump as willing to be his vice presidential candidate or Secretary of Defense should he win. That drew some shots from Zinke's congressional opponent, Denise Juno, who said, hey, you know, why don't you worry about your job in Congress, and pointed out that he missed a key vote on a land and water conservation vote while he was in Montana.
Well, it was actually kind of an exact replay of what we saw when Speaker Boehner stepped down in the House. Ryan Zinke said that people were talking about him as a potential House Speaker. And that's what he said this time about being vice president. Not only did he put his name out there, but he suggests people are talking about it. I don't know who those people are. The only person I've heard talk about it publicly, at least, is Ryan Zinke himself.
It sounds like Trump didn't fill the Metro Park Arena in Billings. The press is reporting between 6,000 and 7,500 people came to the event. Those numbers are less than the estimated 9,000 plus that came to see Bernie Sanders when he was in Missoula a couple of weeks ago. Any surprises there that Bernie outdrew Trump in Montana?
You know, you don't get exact estimates on crowd sizes. Bernie Sanders going to Missoula, I would expect to draw big. I guess I would have expected Trump to draw at least that kind of crowd in Billings.
The other thing that was interesting was Gianforte's response. He took a very different approach.
This is Republican gubernatorial candidate Greg Gianforte.
Exactly. He didn't attend the rally, citing maybe conveniently a previous commitment, but he did put out a press release. And what struck me about that press release about Trump's visit is that it didn't even mention Trump. He simply expressed enthusiasm about unnamed presidential candidates visiting Montana. It seemed like a classic case of knowing you have to say something but not really wanting to. And like Republicans across the country, this is something of a tough spot for Gianforte. I think he'd like to run a more serious issue-oriented campaign. That is something a little bit different than what we've seen from the Trump campaign. But he also can't reject Trump because he absolutely needs Trump's voters. And as I was watching on YouTube last night, right in back of Trump, there were two guys wearing those bright orange and navy blue Gianforte shirts. It's a tough line to toe for Gianforte.
Other significant political news this week in Montana, this is sort of ongoing news out of the courts. Chuck, last week, federal judge Charles Lovell struck down Montana's campaign contribution limits, and then this week he put his own ruling on hold. What do you think all that legal back and forth boils down to for this election cycle and beyond?
Well, it's potentially very interesting because the state is actually just appealing part of his ruling, and what they're appealing and what he stayed is striking down the limits on how much a political party can give to a governor candidate, which is $23,850. And, this became a major issue in the 2012 governor's race when Lovell issued a similar ruling, and then the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned it. So there was a brief period when candidates could accept larger-than-usual donations from political parties. And then candidate Bullock was in a race with Rick Hill, a former Republican congressman. Hill accepted $500,000 from the Republican Party. And then there was a lawsuit filed by Bullock's campaign manager, and a judge in Helena basically said he couldn't take the money or spend it. So it became a major issue in the closing days of the 2012 campaign.
As far as we know, during that window when the contribution limits from the political parties were struck down before this recent stay, as far as we know, there haven't been any $500,000 checks written. Or do you think there's a likelihood there's going to be a window where the political parties are chomping at the bit and they might try to do something similar that they did with Rick Hill?
I think what happened to Rick Hill may be a deterrent to it happening this time. I think that became a major issue that hurt Hill in the closing days of the campaign. So I'd be surprised if we see those kind of donations this time, but you never know.
Back on the campaign trail in the governor's race, Steve Bullock, the incumbent Democrat, continues to try to make political hay out of a 2009 lawsuit that his Republican challenger Greg Gianforte filed over a public stream access easement that crossed his Bozeman property. This week, the Bullock campaign reached out to us, and they asked us for an interview on this topic. Rob, can you remind me exactly what that's about?
Sure. The story reemerged a couple weeks ago in a piece on Montana Cowgirl, which is a liberal anonymous blog. And the issue is over a dispute between the Gianfortes and Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. The Montana Cowgirl piece characterizes that dispute as an attempt by Gianforte to block public access to the East Gallatin River.
Well, here's part of the conversation that Governor Bullock had with MTPR's Corin Cates Carney.
It seems like a mischaracterization to say he wanted to remove access. Let's just talk about the location of it.
Yeah, I don't, he sued. And you can read articles back from 2009 where he and his lawyers were saying, no, this access isn't legal. It shouldn't be there. Oh, there's other ways to get to the river. So however you want to try to paint it 7 years later, he filed in court against the state of Montana to get rid of this legal access. That's an affront to Montanans.
Rob, is the issue really as cut and dried as Governor Bullock makes it sound there? Was he really suing to block public access to a stream, which is sort of sacred in Montana?
Well, the governor is indeed correct in saying that the Gianforte's lawsuit sought to remove the easement. In fact, the Gianforte's complaint said that they were, quote, entitled to achieve clean title to the property without burdensome encumbrances, such as this alleged easement. End quote. It goes on to say that they were seeking a court decree, quote, extinguishing the improperly conveyed easement and any other such easement rights claimed by FWP and or the public, end quote. Now, it is also true that there were spur trails off the main trail that did, in fact, cross the Gianforte's property in violation of the easement. So the Gianforte's did have a legitimate claim on that front. And they also maintain that there was significant confusion over this easement, where its boundary was, and other such matters. And that also appears to be true. Now, in the end, common sense seemed to prevail here, and a sensible resolution was reached outside of court in which those spur trails were removed by FWP, and the Gianfortes put up a fence to make sure that people didn't wander off the main trail. So access was never actually denied, and the Gianfortes maintain that far from looking to deny the public access, they've actually helped facilitate it by, among other things, allowing people to park on their property. But look, what's really going on here isn't about this particular incident, which was basically a minor disagreement that took something of an ugly turn before a reasonable solution was found. For Democrats, this is a story that highlights a much broader allegation that Gianforte is an ideologue whose values don't match up with Montana. They want to portray him as a right-wing nut on a whole range of issues, including abortion, LGBT issues, religion, public school, and public lands. So this lawsuit is one of those things that comes along in a campaign that maybe on its own terms doesn't seem like all that big of a deal, is easy to explain away, but that some think is illustrative of a general disposition. And I think that's really why Democrats are hitting so hard on this.
I get the sense that neither campaign so far has really taken on the other side on really substantive policy issues. You know, we've had this stream access suit going on. Supporters of Gianforte are trying to make a big deal of the governor using the state plane for campaign purposes, which he's reimbursed the state for some of those expenses. Meanwhile, this week, we heard that the two candidates agreed to their first one-on-one debate coming up on June 26th. You think the discussion is likely to change once the candidates have a chance to confront each other one-on-one and we'll get some real substantive policy differences between the two?
Well, just adding to your list of unsubstantive issues, my favorite is the Democratic charge that Gianforte is a New Jersey billionaire, which is just ridiculous. And playing off of that, I noticed this week that Republicans have now taken to referring to Steve Bullock as a New York lawyer, presumably based on his days at Columbia Law School. Also silly. That said, Gianforte's campaign has been very disciplined in its focus on the economy, and he's put forth some serious policy proposals on taxes and education. And while Bullock hasn't offered up new policy proposals, he certainly has sought to run on his record over the last 4 years, repeatedly pointing out his efforts to keep the state's fiscal house in order, the high employment rate in Montana, improvements in health care, and so on. So there is substance in there. And the candidates are really staking out different visions for Montana's future. It's true, a lot of the attention is focused on these somewhat side issues. But once this debate comes along next month, the candidates will have a chance to present those visions more directly and talk specifically about some of the issues.
Chuck, when the two candidates get together to debate, what do you think their strengths and weaknesses are? Who potentially has more to gain or lose in the debate?
Steve Bullock, as an incumbent governor, is obviously better known than Greg Gianforte, the challenger. So the debate will give Gianforte statewide exposure that maybe he hasn't had with everybody. I think Bullock, he has to defend himself from Gianforte, who said, yeah, you've created jobs, but they're generally not high-paying jobs. For Gianforte, it's a chance to really show who he is to Montana. And so it's a chance for him to kind of break out of the boxes as a challenger. For Bullock, it's a chance for him to defend his record and make the case that he deserves another 4 years. Debates themselves, I don't know how much difference they make in elections. In the 2012 race, Bullock and Rick Hill debated 6 or 7 times. If debates were what the election was decided on, I think Rick Hill would have won. I think a lot of observers, including Democrats, felt that Hill did better in a lot of the debates, although Bullock came on strong in the last couple. So, but it's a chance to show Montanans who they are, what they stand for, see how they stand up to the criticism of the other side, and kind of get a good feel for them.
Yeah, and of course, this will be Greg Gianforte's first political debate as a new candidate. So I'll be interested to see how he does on the debate stage. Looks like we've come to the end of the time that we have this week. Rob, Chuck, thanks for joining me, and I hope you have a good holiday weekend.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. You too.